Session number 10422, Rule 4.
Colonel M. R. Ferens, Reel 4. Can you tell me, Colonel, the procedures and activities leading up to embarkation?
All rather hazy now. As I've said, we had two leaves, a Christmas leave and an embarkation leave. When we came back from embarkation leave, which must have been towards the end of April, our time was spent in being issued with tropical clothing, pith helmets. Seem to remember a lot of time was spent in packing weapons, Bren guns, etc. Shortly after that, we got our orders, and we had to go by train from Devon to Glasgow, where we embarked on a Canadian Pacific liner called the Duchess of Richmond. This was a North Atlantic liner, and it had no air conditioning.
And about what time is this going?
Dates, do you mean? End of April, early May, I imagine. I think we had one or two days on board before the convoy sailed. The convoy commander was on a ship called the Doric. Quite a big convoy, and on the Duchess of Richmond, I think there was brigade headquarters, the 8th Battalion DLI, and the 6th Battalion DLI. I can't remember whether the 9th was on, but certainly the 8th Battalion and the 6th Battalion and brigade headquarters. And we sailed north towards Iceland, and then out into the Atlantic. We had the escort, I remember an aircraft carrier, the cruiser Exeter, famous for the River Plate, and a lot of destroyers. Life on board was very good. The accommodation for the men wasn't so good. They were all in the cabins lower down in the ship. Each company had a section of cabins together, and the company sergeant major's cabin was the company office. And every morning, I was commanding C Company, I had to go down into the bowels of the ship to take company office. And as the voyage progressed, so the smell increased. It wasn't a very pleasant job, and the men had to live down there. Feeding was excellent. There was a good bar. We had physical training every morning on the decks. Bren guns were mounted on their tripods and were manned all day. As we proceeded south, we called at Freetown, Sierra Leone. I presume, for refueling. And we were there for about 36 hours. And I should say that the only bathing arrangements on board ship, the baths ran with salt water, which wasn't very easy to bathe in. But when we got to Sierra Leone, there was a cloudburst. And immediately we all went down, got a towel, stripped off, and they had awnings on the ship, and the water ran off the awnings like a shower. And we stood underneath these showers and had a freshwater bath. I remember that very well. And on one of the ships that was moored near us were a whole lot of nurses. They were very amused to see a lot of naked men running about enjoying the freshwater bath.
Did the conditions on board have any effect on the troops' morale at all during the course of a long voyage?
Not that I can remember, no. They were kept reasonably busy. We had series of lectures, physical training every morning. I remember a boxing competition that went on for quite a long time during the voyage. I should say that before we got to Sierra Leone, we woke up one morning to find that our escort had left us. And we were left with the cruiser Exeter as our only escort. The aircraft carrier, we were told, had gone into the Mediterranean. And we learnt later that the rest of the escort had gone off chasing the Bismarck, which had come within 100 miles of the convoy and was subsequently sunk. After Sierra Leone, we proceeded south. The weather got better, the ship got hotter, and we were ordered to wear our khaki drill tunics for dinner. The officers were ordered to wear our khaki drill tunics for dinner at night, which was a stupid order because we all sweated like mad, and our khaki drill uniform became salt stained as a result, as there was no laundry, of course, and it became very disreputable. Part of the convoy put in to Cape Town, but the Duchess of Richmond and some other ships proceeded up the east coast of Africa, and we put in Durban, where we got a wonderful reception. I think we were there for 3 days. We were allowed ashore, and the South Africans gave us a great welcome. Very attractive young ladies with their cars were waiting outside the dock gates, and as soon as we went ashore, they got hold of us and invited us to accompany them, and they showed us the town. And I remember one of the days was a Sunday, and a friend, Captain Proud, and I were invited by these ladies to join them at the races. They took us to the race meeting, and my particular lady friend, her father, was the president of the race course. So I was greatly honoured to be asked up into the president's box, presented with a race card, and he had marked the horses that he thought would perform well. So I had a lucrative afternoon's racing. And then we were invited back to their home for dinner. I shall never forget the reception we received for our stay in Durban. Then I think we proceeded north from Durban without an escort. I may be wrong about that, but I think we proceeded up to the Red Sea in convoy, but without escort. And we duly arrived at Port Tewfik. It took us quite a long time to disembark, and we entrained at Suez and proceeded up the canal to a camp at a place called Cassassine, a tented camp, and we were there for about 3 weeks, I think. Cassassine is on the Sweetwater Canal. We were warned not to eat any fruit and stuff without washing it and peeling it. But inevitably, I think the whole battalion caught gippy tummy. That perhaps was the object of sending us there in the first case. Everybody got it. We did some route marches whilst we were there.
What was your first impressions of Egypt?
Not very good. Everything was fly blown. Very hot. It had taken us, I think, 7 weeks to come in convoy from Great Britain. So it would be June when we were at Cassassine, and it was very hot.
Was the food good in the camp?
We had big mess tents. I think the food was pretty good. I think we went out a little bit. Ismailia, I think, was the nearest town. And there was a French club there. I think we went into there. Can't remember very much more about it. The next move was by train again, I think, to Alexandria, where we embarked on a mine layer called the Abdil, HMS Abdil, a high-speed mine layer, which took us to Cyprus. I think we landed at Famagusta, and the whole division went to Cyprus. This was after the invasion of Crete, I think. Not sure about that. But we had to put Cyprus in a state of defense. I remember my company was ordered to Larnaca, and I was given the task of putting the golf course at Larnaca into a state of defense.
What did that entail, Colonel?
Well, I had my own company.
Which company was this?
C Company, 6th DLI.
What rank are you at this time?
I think I was major then. And I had a whole lot of Cypriot labor. And each day we went down, and with the assistance of the Cypriot labourers, we dug weapon pits, section posts, and I thought I was very clever because I was conscious of air reconnaissance. So I dug all my weapon pits, machine gun posts, etc., in the bunkers of the golf course. so that if they were photographed from the air, they wouldn't be obvious. The golf course was beside the sea, and when the Cypriot labourers stopped for lunch, we had haversack rations, and after eating our haversack rations, we all went into the sea, stark naked, of course. My wife had given me a signet ring for my wedding present, and whilst bathing at Larnaca, unfortunately, the ring came off my finger, and I've never seen it since, somewhere in the sea. After a week or two at Larnaca, we rejoined the battalion. Battalion headquarters were in a village called Cocchini Tremithia, not far from... Stop it a minute. Not far from Nicosia, Nicosia Aerodrome. And my company was again detached from the main battalion, and I was in a wood of some sort on the road from Nicosia to Troodos. The troops had bivouac tents, and each platoon commander had a bivouac tent and slept with his platoon. Myself and my second in command, Captain Bill Proud, had a bell tent. This was quite a good situation. And whilst we were there, we had to dig latrines, deep trench latrines. And I remember my company sergeant major, Charlton, had had some experience in the regular army, and he said the only way to make latrines work was to put some rotten meat in the bottom first. Let the flies work on the meat, set up a living organism in the latrines, and they would work. So this we did. I can't remember doing a lot of training whilst we were there. It was very hot. We didn't do much in the way of marching. I remember we had some range practice. There was a firing range. But I really can't remember much about the training.
How did the civilians receive you?
The civilians were quite good. We weren't plagued with vandalism. Troops slept with their personal arms. I can't remember losing any. No, the Cypriots were very friendly and quite all right. Obviously, we couldn't talk to them. They used to sell us fresh figs and fruit, grapes.
How about your leisure time? Did you, were you able to get into the
yes.
towns and villages?
Leave was authorized into Nicosia. I think a 1,500 weight truck per company was allowed to go into Nicosia each evening. It was very interesting. General Ramsden was commanding the division. There were a lot of disorderly houses in Nicosia, and eventually some of these were licensed. It was a divisional order.
Was VD and that kind of thing a problem with the...
It had never been a problem until we got to Nicosia. And there were some cases of VD in the early days. This is perhaps why the general made an order putting certain houses in bounds. And they came under the supervision of the RAMC. I think General Headquarters Middle East got to hear of this. And before we left Cyprus, the whole scheme was squashed, and I believe General Ramsden got a severe reprimand from the Middle East. We were in Cyprus from July until October, I think, when we were advised that we would be leaving. I think we sailed from Famagusta to Haifa in Palestine. I think the arrangements were that an Indian division would take over from us in Cyprus, and they would take over RMT. And when we got to Palestine, we were to take over their MT. Now, RMT was all British. It had come out with us from England, and when we took over the Indian Division MT, this was a mixed lot. I remember the 1500 weight trucks were Chevrolets, whereas ours had been Morris's and Austin's. We moved from Haifa, I think, to a place called Acre. And there we were told that our next move would be to Iraq.
How did you view that prospect? It's a long way off.
This was quite exciting. Some time was spent on servicing the new Battalion MT. Eventually, we set off, crossed the River Jordan, and out into the desert. We crossed the desert in formation. It was a practice for our later work in the Western Desert. Each night we formed an encampment, and we were warned to take special care of our weapons, as the Iraqis were very prone to stealing any sort of weapon they could get their hands on. I think it took us a couple of days to reach Habaneer, which was an RAF base in Iraq. We stayed there for 24 or 36 hours. We were able to have baths or showers, and it was very nice to get back to civilization.
Can I just ask you, Colonel, before I go much further? You talk about moving in formation. How was the formation organized?
In columns of vehicles. I think the intelligence officer was in front, and he was moving on a compass bearing, although there were tracks leading across the desert. We went past an oil pumping station, I remember, called Rutba, part of the pipeline from the oil fields to Tripoli in Syria, in Lebanon. It was very dusty. And we motored, I suppose, for about 6 hours a day, something of that order. Whilst we were at Habaneer, I went up into the low hills to see some of the damage and the remains of the uprising. Can't remember the Iraqi man who caused the uprising, but it was just before we went over that the uprising was brought under control. We were warned when we were at Habaneer that the next part of our journey, we were making to Kirkuk, that was our destination, would be through Baghdad. And we had to wear our steel helmets, sit to attention in the vehicles, troop carrying 3 tonners in the main, and put a stern expression on our faces as we motored through Baghdad, which all seemed rather silly because quite a lot of the Iraqis in Baghdad cheered us as we went through.
There were no problems.
No problems at all. Ultimately, we arrived at Kirkuk, which is a center of the oil industry in Iraq.
Had you been told why you were moving up to this area?
We'd been told that we had to build a line of defense against the Germans who were attacking, and I can't remember the name of the place.